Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. You can find more podcasts like this by visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts or subscribe to our iTunes feed by searching for EDUCAUSE. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference presented by Chester H. Zettel of Palm Beach Community College. The session is entitled, How to Implement Electronic Document Management Successfully, a Community College's Recommendations for Success.
Good afternoon. We're all here for implementing electronic document management in a community college setting. I do have to ask you to please mute or turn off these little devices. Are the ones that are going to make noise throughout the presentation. Also, the EDUCAUSE asks that you either use the link on the kiosk main pages out front, or you can do it from your laptops here with the conference page to do your evaluations online this year. And so we're not using up paper in all these sessions. Other than that, I think I'll get right to our introductions here. This session will demonstrate how, after two failed attempts, Palm Beach Community College improved the student services and disaster recovery measures by transitioning from a paper-based processes to electronic. Our presenter, Chuck Zettler, will highlight improvements in the turnaround time, efficiency, compliance, and discuss the enterprise vision and analysis that led to their successes. Chuck is the Director of Information Technology Project Management at Palm Beach Community College in Lake Worth, Florida. He has worked in the public higher education for the past 23 years, beginning as a DBA, or Database Administrator, at Georgia Southern. After several years in information technology field, he transitioned into student services and served in registrar's positions at Florida Atlantic and Palm Beach Community College. I come from New Jersey, the county community college. I'm still got to get that out of my system. In 99, Chuck was appointed to serve as the project manager for the Palm Beach Community College's ERP implementation. And after successfully completing the ERP project, went on to serve as executive director of the Florida Community College Software Consortium. His current position is that of the project management and supports effective planning, coordination, and management of information technology projects across the college community. Chuck.
Okay, thank you, Daniel. My objective this afternoon, other than not tripping on this cord, is to spend the next 50 minutes sharing with you at least my experiences, to hopefully have a dialogue with those of you here in this room about electronic document management. And I hope at the end of the 50 minutes you take something out of this room to either help take you to the nirvana state where we all want to be, or at least some tidbit that can help you successfully manage any kind of technology project at your local college. Before I start, I'm curious about what part of the title drew some of you here. If you could just raise your hand, I'd like to have an idea of how many of you are in a community college, two-year type segment population. That's good to see. You know, I come to EDUCAUSE and I go to all these presentations and everybody's from Harvard or MIT, and you know, their little department's IT budget is larger than our entire college budget. And I'm thinking, how can we ever achieve what these people are achieving? So it's nice to see other community college people. So I'm assuming the rest of you came because of the document management side of the presentation here. As Daniel said, I actually am currently working in a project management capacity at Palm Beach Community College. And I have like the coolest, best job you could possibly have. I tell everybody that I'm involved in conception and birth, and then raising the child is somebody else's job. So I get to do the fun stuff. So basically what I do, and you'll learn a little bit more about it, is I from a project management perspective, lead those major enterprise-type projects that we do at the college, and then also mentor our staff on using PMP techniques and other project management methodologies to successfully run smaller projects around the college. And that's what I do, and it's really a great job, and I hope to do it until I retire, which now evidently is going to be longer than I originally thought. although the market was better today. Okay, today, during the time I'm talking, before I hope to get some of you talking, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the environment at Palm Beach Community College. I'm going to give you what our challenges and objectives were. Then we're going to go over our project timeline, which is really critical to what I think some of our major success factors were. I'm going to give you a couple of pointers about how we conducted our technology needs assessment, and some more little details about how we did our project analysis methodology and our process improvement methodology and some of the things we did for analyzing process improvement. Tell you our results, the things we're proud of, and then circle back and give you seven things that I think, if you keep in your mind, will help you be successful in this endeavor at your college. Then I'm going to talk just at the very end about how we found our vendor, who we're extremely pleased with, and I'll share with you at the end who they are. Unfortunately, there's no way to move from page to page without me walking back here. Okay, Palm Beach Community College. We're in the southern part of the state, north of Fort Lauderdale, north of Miami. We are one of the largest counties in Florida, both in population and geographically. We're the third largest population-wise. In a geographical perspective, we're the largest. We have approximately 47,000 students on an annual basis. We're a comprehensive community college. That was my point earlier. We have students who are taking our youth college type classes, all the way to senior citizens and everything possible in between. People, electricians, plumbers, cosmetologists. We teach traditional AA transfer students to our state universities and private schools and out of state, as well as in 2009, we'll be offering baccalaureate programs. We also teach nurses and dental assisting people and firefighters and policemen, and it's like anything you need to serve our community. So we have a wide range of programs and a lot of different processes around all of those different kinds of programs. We're a multi-campus and an urban institution. We have five campuses and several other teaching centers, and we're getting ready to build a new campus in the western part of our community. And with that comes the conundrum of shared governance that community colleges face. And those of you who are in that environment know, we have vice presidents who think they run everything, and we have campus provosts who think they run the campus, and then sometimes nobody runs anything. And so we have this matrix decision-making, shared governance process that makes doing projects like this really challenging. Geographically, like I said, it can be as much as an hour drive from one campus to the other. However, our campuses are dispersed in such a way that our student population, a large portion of it, 35 to 40% of our student population, will be serviced either through their student services processes or through their classes at multiple locations because of the way we do our course offerings. And part of that's academically driven so that we can have specific expertise at different locations. So we're trying to, because we're poor, we're trying to do things as efficiently as possible. So it requires the students some time to go from campus to campus. And as Daniel said, I'm not proud of saying this, but we had two failed attempts, both of which I was involved with, neither of which I was in charge of, I can say. But I was involved with both of them and failed to the point of we bought hardware, we bought software, we tried to implement it, we couldn't, then it became obsolete. Then we did it again, and then it became obsolete, and then we did it our third time. And the third time seemed to be the charm, because that seems to be the one that's fixed, or that's working. Okay, challenges. This is our major one, right here. And I probably don't have to explain this anymore, but you know, we're right down at the bottom there. And over the 2000-2005 season, we had three eyes, hurricane eyes, that came right over our college. I've lived in Florida 20 years, and the last 4 years have not been pleasant, especially when it comes to paying my homeowner's insurance every year. But this is a huge challenge for us, and is really what drove this project to the point of something had to be done. Fortunately enough, it was not really the end of what we achieved. Okay. At the point we started this project in 2004, we had approximately 4 million mission-critical documents in paper format only. We were very paper-intensive in our admissions registration processes prior to web and services and online services, and we had a lot of documents left over from that. All of, you know, HR seems to create paper for everything. That's the most paper-intense people I know. and they had big, thick folders this thick on people. So we had a lot of paper format documents. We had hurricanes coming at us every summer. There's like, come off Africa like that all the time. And by side job, I'm also in charge of our hurricane preparedness plan, which is one of the things I dust out and go over frequently with the college community. We had the separation of campuses. One of the things we had done with our ERP implementation and the advent of self-service in the student area and in the employee area is we had gone through a methodical, systematic process of looking at every process and saying, can we change that process so it doesn't create paper? Our students have to apply online. Our employees have to apply for jobs online. You can't change your address unless you do it online. You can't change your program of study unless you do it online. We had gone through a systematic process of doing it, but there are just certain laws and regulations and processes that deal with financial aid, that deal with residency determinations, that require us to get a piece of paper from someone, or something that's in electronic format that we have to save in a content in that student's file or folder. So we had some significant paper-based processes left over. I mean, I was going down this path of we aren't going to have paper anymore, we're going to be a paperless society. Well, that's wrong. We actually generate more paper now. So our paper processes really hindered services because we had multiple campuses. Students would go to multiple campuses. Mail comes to multiple places. It was being turned in at the multiple sites. We told the students you had a home campus, and if you had anything that dealt with paper, you were supposed to drive to Boca, even if you lived in Jupiter, to turn it in. But they don't do that. So things were put in the pony. You know, you may have schools. I'm trying to put the pony out of business. That's what I've been doing. But we had a courier service we paid to drive from campus to campus on a circuit all day long, just moving paper from one place to the other. And then we were faxing documents between campuses, of all things, or having lots of phone calls between campuses. The other problem it led to is some real customer service inequities from campus to campus. And our administration believes whatever campus you go to, you should receive the same experience at the college. And that's a challenge, but they're really adamant about that. The other thing is that we were grappling with the whole issue of unstructured information because we had, you know, critical information in PDFs, emails, web pages, you know, other scanned images, paper that related to the human resources record we needed to keep or the student record. We were printing these things out and then putting them in a file folder, and we didn't want to have to print them out and put them in a scanner in order to get them into our content management system. So that was really kind of critical to us that we figure out a way to deal with unstructured information. We do pretty good with our structured data and our databases, but we had a huge issue with our unstructured information. Disaster recovery, that was a huge, huge issue for us because of the hurricane situation. We needed remote and simultaneous web access to information. We wanted to improve efficiency. Our CFO doesn't like to hire people. In fact, every time a job comes open, he tries to figure out how he can eliminate it. So our offices are expected to work efficiently. This is recorded, isn't it? Maybe, hopefully he won't be listening to this. And then we needed to the ability to retrieve and track and share documents throughout the college. Okay, we needed better privacy. Our HR people are just fanatical about the whole HIPAA thing. I mean, they're so fanatical that everybody in HR can't see your HIPAA folders. And we needed better ways to handle those. We didn't have a good way to handle things in the student services arena that dealt with student discipline. Typically, you know, that's not part of the folder that most people in the college can see. That's usually only whoever's handling the discipline issues can see that. Any legal type documents and subpoenas and things like that are usually kept separate. Well, we were just piling them all in the folder because we didn't have good measures and good ways to handle that. We really wanted quicker turnaround time. We had lots of backlogs because paper was sitting on people's desks. It wasn't getting processed. Someone was out. One campus was understaffed. One was overstaffed. And we just couldn't process things timely enough. We're always losing things. And we also wanted to really enhance that experience with the students. And one of the big keys to our success is as we did our analysis, we came to an understanding that we wanted to scan documents at the point of receipt. We wanted the student or the staff member to walk up to the counter, hand them your driver's license, put it in a hopper, scan it, and you hand it back. We wanted to eliminate paper coming into our process as much as possible. We're going to open the mail, scan it, and shred it, and be done with it. So we wanted that point of receipt scanning. Okay, here's the timeline. March 2004, that's when we had, that 2000 years when we had some of our worst hurricane experiences in Palm Beach County. We had two storms that were like back to back that summer. But we had formed a college-wide committee, which I wasn't chair of. As my role is on the IT side and managing projects, I never put myself in the chair role or put myself kind of out front. I usually find someone else to be my shield. And this particular time, it was our Dean of Student Services from one of our campuses who actually chaired and formed this committee. And I was obviously, you know, a key player in it. But what happened is we did what we always did. We got together and everybody said, oh, let's invite people to come in and show us their technologies and to show us what they had. So we called people and the vendors came in and immediately started salivating because it was their salespeople, not their actual implementation people. So they started salivating because they thought they were going to get a PO tomorrow. And then our users thought they were going to get document management yesterday. And so everybody was happy but me. I was having anxiety attacks because I knew that wasn't going to happen. So I actually went to our president and said, you know, we got to stop this train. It's going nowhere fast and we're going to be able to have failed attempt number three shortly if we don't do something. So he agreed, and in December of 2004, now it obviously took me about 8 months to get to the president, but I did get to him and we stopped it. In December 2004, we actually did a request for qualifications for a consultant to come in who knew the industry, knew the products, knew what other schools had done, to come in and work with us to help us know what we didn't know. If you haven't done this, and there's one thing you want to take out of here, I'd suggest you take this, because it was hugely key to our success, because we stopped the presses, and we said, we've got to analyze what our problems are and understand what possible solutions are before we start buying things and installing things. So we did hire, it happened to be a company called Emerge, and there was an actually excellent consultant we finally got to. We went through several that we said no to, and we finally got someone who was excellent. And in January of 2005, he came in and started working with us, primarily I kind of managed everything, on coming up with a business case and a value proposition of what it was we wanted to do from a business perspective. And we had that finished in October of 2005. So that was about 10 months. Now, it wasn't working constantly because, as I shared with you before, with this shared governance multi-campus beast, so we have to talk to everybody, and everybody has to be collegial, and everybody has to be on board with decision-making processes. That's the way we operate. So it took a while to get there. But what we got was, and I'll share with you a little bit more of it in just a minute, what we got is a really good business case. It had nothing to do with the technologies we were going to use, but a business case as to what we wanted to accomplish to deal with our disaster recovery issues and improve our processes for our students and our staff from the business perspective, and some high-level cost and some equipment type needs we would need. So in November of 2005, we took that to our board, who gave us a financial commitment because we did have some a financial budget together for doing this. And in 2005, we actually at that point issued the RFP to look for a system. So you can see it was a year and a half of analysis and planning that went into this before we ever even stepped out to say, who's the best vendor to meet our needs? Because we needed to fully understand what our needs were before we started looking for vendors. Okay, in November of 2006, we did award the actual vendor contract to a company called Optical Image Technology for implementation of their Docfinity software suite. That's the one we chose. We went through a fairly competitive process. When I get to the part about selecting a vendor, I will show you we had 10 criteria, and we actually in the final cut had, I believe, 8 different vendors come to campus and actually looked at their products to find one that was a good fit for us. If you notice, within 4 months, we were up and live with our first office, which was our registrar and admissions group, which is a fairly large group. Just this past June, we went live with our human resources department, and we're currently working in finance on accounts payable, and then in 2010, we're going to move to some of our academic departments. But in our business case, we identified, obviously, that student services was the most mission critical that we needed to deal with. Plus, anytime you say it's for the students, you're more likely to get money. So that's the other approach. Okay. Here's what we did to kind of do our needs assessment. And this is where the consultant was so helpful to us. We documented all of our problems. We interviewed students. We interviewed staff. And staff at all levels, the front counter people separately from their managers, separately from our high-level administrators. And we documented all the problems, all the concerns, all the needs, because we thought we can't create a future state until we really fully understand as a guiding committee what our current state is. And interestingly enough, our committee had lots of perceptions that were just totally incorrect once we actually went and talked to the person who actually did the work in terms of what their challenges and needs were and their problems were, and talked to students. So we did that and then created what we thought was our future state in order, and did that gap analysis to find out where the differences were. And we created what we consider the roadmap to the future, which was our business plan. In doing this, like I said, the key thing for was involving all of our stakeholders and every one of them. I mean, we really made an effort to talk to our frontline counter people because we knew this was going to be a dramatic change for them. And we needed to include them early in the process to make them comfortable with change. And we documented everything. It's part of my role, and I do have a part-time staff person that works with me. We keep really detailed issues logs and journals and decision logs of what we do, and documented and mapped out all of our processes that we were looking at improving. And then we were really realistic with our time frames. And realistic means that you don't underestimate and you don't overestimate either. We were realistic in what the timeline that we thought it was going to take to get this done was. We were sensitive to some changes, to the effects of change. And then really the other thing was that we really wanted to make sure we matched the technology to the needs of the users. When we started this project, everyone had it in their mind that we were going to just recreate our file rooms. And we were just going to put scanners in file rooms and scan stuff. And then we discovered what workflow was and the magic of workflow, which actually has been really what's been the success of this project. And then we discovered, well, it would be silly to take a piece of paper and then put it in the back room for someone else to file when somebody can just drop it in a scanner and within a second scan it. And we can distribute this filing process to 100 people, or 50 right now in student services. So in our analysis, we discovered those two things, which were really important to our success. Okay. When we actually started doing the analysis of each process, and I didn't put them in the slides here, but we created really detailed process flow diagrams for every single process that involved a piece of paper. And we documented the as-is steps and interviewed all the people involved in it, and then created the to-be steps of how we wanted that process flow to change. And that was really important as we did that analysis because we needed a really good starting point and an entry point. So also as a project manager, it was really important to me because as we started documenting them, we had to put some scope around our project. And I was able to say, well, this one will be in the initial project and this one will not. And so we went through a really rigorous process, and that's why it took us nearly 2 years to do this, of documenting exactly what our changes were all going to be. And we really talked to all the people involved, so they understood. The other thing we did, and I'll show you some examples of what we did in just a minute, but we really looked at all the different assets that were going to be needed in this process because we had images that we were going to create through these scanners, but we also had to incorporate information that came off of reports. Unfortunately, I have to stand up here and tell you, we run kind of a legacy It's not a mainframe-based system anymore because we moved it over to Linux, but it's basically an ugly green screen back-end system, which we hope to be able to replace in 5 years, but now it's going to be 7 years based on the at least the funding of community colleges in the state of Florida. That's getting pushed out. So we still have to deal with that system and bring data from that system into our workflows. That system doesn't have workflow, wasn't going to have workflow. We needed to create this workflow system so that we could extend the life of our back-end ERP because college just wasn't ready at this point to change or capable. Okay. We identified all the time constraints that we had with each of the process flows. We were having a huge problem because we were multi-campus and we were processing admissions. We don't have admissions decisions like a university would have, but we have a step where the state of Florida says, you can't go to school here unless we know you got sand in your feet and you're a bona fide, absolute Florida resident. Otherwise, we want to get four times the amount of money if you want to come and live in grandma's condo and go to school. Otherwise, you should stay up in New Jersey or New York. So we have a pretty paper-intensive, well, it's the truth. We have the state of Florida has a very paper-intensive process where we have to verify the residency of every friggin' student that comes in our door. We also have a large population of people who live in this area who are from other countries and other areas, and we have to be really careful that they have all the appropriate visas or things to be qualified for in-state tuition. And so we have to have copies of all of this stuff. So we don't really have an admissions decision because we're open door, but we have a how much we're going to charge you decision, which is paper intensive, which requires paper. Well, the problem we were having was that some of our campuses, because of the size, had lots of paper to make those decisions coming in the door and not enough staff to process them. Other campuses, because we kept the same work hours at every campus, had people sitting around, you know, with not a whole lot to do, but we had these backlogs at other campuses, so we had just these huge inequities. And we also knew how important it was to make that residency decision as quickly as we can after the student touches us, and that we had to have a way to route these things to various people if the person who normally does it wasn't there or was backlogged. So that's the kind of thing we were looking at in terms of time constraints for our workflows, you know, how many days can lapse before this action needs to be taken. And then we mapped all of our work distribution requirements and the metrics. That was also really, really key, is we made sure that we knew what our success metrics were before we started, because we wanted to go back and say, you know, right now it's taking us 3 days to make this admissions decision. Now, because of the system, we're able to do it in 1 day. And we did that for all of the workflows that we identified and a number of our scanning things that we identified, because we wanted to have really good metrics in order to measure our success so we could go back to administration and say, what a great job we did, give us more money, we'll do some more things. So, okay, the first phase that we did was our admissions, registration area, and then financial aid. And then what I said before, we created phase two, which is human resources and payroll, purchasing, and then our contracts office and our reporting office. And then phase three is going to be our academic areas. Our academic areas don't have that much that they need to retain, but they have some issues. One of the things in phase two that we've done that our academic people love is because now the way our system works, when our HR department receives a transcript for a faculty member, they scan it, and it's immediately available to the department office if they need to look at it. Because our departments make credentialing decisions about credentialing to teach specific criteria or specific courses. So what the faculty member was having to do was the faculty member had to take the copy to the department office, even though HR already had it. So we would make the faculty member drive to the Lake Worth campus, get a copy of their transcript if they didn't have one in HR, and then drive back to their campus to give it to their department. And now the departments just can look in the file and see it. Okay. In student services, we installed these point of entry scanners college-wide. When we went live, we installed about 50 scanners college-wide. for people to scan. There are these little Fujitsu scanners. I have the model number written down, but you know, they cost about $800, but they're really solid, fast scanners. And our people can just drop something in the scanner and scan it right in. We developed a number of workflow applications for registrar and admissions and for financial aid. I'm going to talk about a couple of specific ones here in just a minute. In the registration area, the admissions workflow was one we did. We also did a transcript workflow for them for the evaluation of incoming transcripts. Financial aid, there's a process called enrollment verification. I don't know if those of you who are on the functional side may be familiar with it. But a student applies for the financial aid online. And then the college is notified of which ones we have to verify the paper for. And then we have to send a letter to the student saying, bring in these documents for us to verify that what you did online was really truthful. The way our college did it was we sent the letter to the student, and if they came in and they had two of the three things, we sent them back and gave them everything back and said, get the rest of it and don't bring it to us until you have all of it. And if you brought it to the campus that was not your home campus, we told you to drive to the other campus, which was your real campus, because they were going to attend to it there for you. Now we've changed that completely, where documents can come in anywhere. They're scanned in. Our imaging system actually updates our ERP to let us know it's there. And then we have this, what we call a gather step or gather process. As soon as all the data is ready and all the documents are ready, it creates a file that goes to our workflow engine that kicks it off to someone who can verify this stuff. And these people are all over our college district. We have about 20 different people who do enrollment or financial aid verifications, and it's a round robin process, so that everybody feels, you know, equally put upon to do it, because none of them like to do it. And they were always fighting over, I did more than you, or you did more than me. So we created a round-robin process for them to do this. And it's really great because we can manage it. At least our financial aid officer thinks it is. And that's really one of those real process efficiencies we had, that actually we were able to document that it impacted our enrollment, because the student can't enroll until this is done. And we were so backlogged that we had students who were actually not getting their financial aid, so they couldn't enroll. Now, we don't have a backlog at all anymore. And it's because of this process and the ability to be able to distribute the work across a lot of people. Okay, here's one of our scan stations. And the two guys standing up are actually the technicians. If you're one of those really heavy tech guys and you have a question, I'm going to refer it to somebody else. I'll do my best to answer it, or I'll give you their names. And they know all the hands-on technical things. That's one of our financial aid representatives. And if you can see, that's the scanner right here that's at this workstation for this particular person. And when the student walks up with whatever paper document they have, they put it in that hopper. It scans very quickly. We have created an interface. Fortunately, it's just basically screen scraping, but our vendor can also do APIs or any other kind of interfaces too with our ERP system. And it immediately scrapes what it needs to do the indexing. It indexes it in, and then if it needs to, it kicks off the appropriate workflow to do the processing, whatever it needs to be. I thought we were going to have a huge problem with our users, you know, because anytime you change anything, it takes longer, even if it doesn't take longer. Because we're all going in with this mindset, oh, this is going to be so much more work, and we all need to be reclassified and paid more, and now we're scanners, and, you know, we have all much, and now they all love it. They just love it. You know, this guy does have a little paper basket there, but I just love going around because they say, I don't have any paper anymore. And they really can't imagine life without this now, because they all are scanning documents. This is how the workflow works for transcripts. And transcripts were a huge problem for us because we were always backlogged on transcript evaluation, and we didn't really know how backlogged we were. All we knew was the students were going to the president's office yelling and screaming because they couldn't enroll because the transcript wasn't evaluated, and we knew it was in any one of six places on somebody's desk distributed around. So now when the transcripts actually come in, these are the paper ones. All of our electronic ones are handled through our ERP system. These are the ones that are still in paper. They're scanned in, and then what really happens here is our back-end system is in Software AG tools, which are really antiquated and horrible. So If some of you may be using Natural in a database, and if you are, I share your pain. So what we have to do is create a data warehouse of all of our data, which we've done in SQL. So this system is SQL-based, and so it takes basically the student ID and then all the other associated data information it needs that's in our warehouse about this particular student, and it will make a workflow decision of what to do with this particular transcript. Because some of our transcripts, based on what program you're in, may go to a specific evaluator to be handled. Some go to the pooled evaluators. Some aren't even evaluated at all. So once that person receiving that transcript, usually in one of our six mail places, because they mail them to all of our campuses, scans it in, it looks at the data that's in our ERP to make a decision which workflow and how to flow that transcript so it can get to the right person to be processed. This particular screenshot I did a couple of days ago, and we're about 1,000 behind. In our fall term last year, at this time, we were probably 3,000 transcripts behind and trying to get them evaluated. So this process really has sped up our transcript evaluation, plus we at least know who needs to be evaluated or what kind of backlog, or at least our registrar knows. Before, he didn't even know because it was all in paper. The other thing that's really good here, which is the other piece that helped, is because the transcript was scanned at the point of entry as soon as we got it, if an advisor or counselor, and we have several hundred around our district, needs it in order to make an override decision for a prerequisite or something, they have it available to them that day, as soon as we received it. Before, you know, that's when all the phone calls would happen and the faxes and the yelling and the screaming. And now our counselors and advisors can just look right online and see it, and they can make that override decision if they need to. Many of our workflows have actually branching in it. This is one example of it, where in this particular case, there's actually a different person who actually creates a letter and information to be sent to the student, because our transcript evaluators, who were more skilled and we pay more, were spending all the time doing the actual sending out letters and mailing and things like that. And because everything's now completely online, we needed a way to send something over to the next person to say, okay, now create the packet to mail the student. And that's an example of how that would happen. The other thing that we did, and I didn't show you a workstation, is we ended up getting all of our staff two monitors. Our CFO didn't like that, but it really, that was the only way to, especially in these offices, they had to have a monitor to bring up the image they were looking at and then our ERP in order to work between the two. People who just look at stuff regularly don't get two monitors. Okay. These are some of the results we have. We definitely can meet higher volumes at peak time. And we can use staff for other things. We can get information turned around much faster than before. We did create these processes which integrated our structured data and our unstructured data information together. And that was my example I gave you of what we did within financial aid verifications. Because you just can't imagine when we were documenting what these people did, the chaos of looking through files to see if you got something, and then tomorrow going back and checking again, and then checking on our ERP to see if the data was in. I mean, we just wasted a lot of time checking between all these different sources, and we needed to somehow bring them all together. And we were able to do that with this particular case. In our HR implementation, we do a lot of workflow between our HR department and our payroll department, mainly because they don't like to talk to one another. So it really works out really nice because they're only like next door to one another. But as soon as all of our HR documents are usually anything dealing with personnel issues, we always deal with personnel. Payroll is this locked place in the back that nobody ever goes to. And it just worked extremely well to be able to flow the information out of HR up to payroll that they needed. Again, we can use the reporting tools that are in our system to monitor where we are in a lot of these workflows now, which we could not before. And we can also monitor processing levels at every campus. We actually have the data on who's processing the amount of transcripts. Some processes we actually were able to centralize. That's a kind of a dirty word in community college multi-campus environments. Every campus likes to be complete and autonomous on their own. but we were able to centralize some processes because we can now take these things and scan them into a common office that can deal with them. Let's see, and we did make adjustments to some of our processing levels. We actually, through the data and through the reporting tools we use, we were able to tell, you know, that person doesn't do quite as much as we all thought they did. And we were able to tell that by the number of pieces of paper they were handling or are dealing with. And so we were able to make some shifts in personnel and some, I didn't do it, the users did that. And we were able to really improve our productivity. Plus, we had at least six file rooms that we converted into, they wanted to convert them into break rooms and buy refrigerators and all. Well, our CFO squelched that. We converted them into office space for the most case, but we converted six file rooms over to office space that we don't need anymore because we don't have any really centralized filing going on. Okay, here's this. It's a little bit more about the quick scan process that we created. Again, this was really so important to us. And if you're looking at document management, I would really suggest you make sure you look at a vendor who can do this. It really streamlined the process and made it really quick. Because in most cases, the person had our ERP up dealing with the student when they were dealing with a piece of paper at the same time. So they could easily scan it, get it indexed, move it into whatever workflow or send it to file. And what happens is when it's scanned, based on the document type or some other data on the document, it makes all the workflow decisions behind the scenes for the employee. So they don't really have to make the workflow decisions. We do have the capability of the employee saying, even though the automated process says to not flow something, they can kick off the flow themselves manually if they need to. Okay, here's back to what I said. I'd give you like six or seven recommendations of what I think are important. The first one's planning. Of course, I'm a project manager and a planner. That's what I do. But if you remember our timeline, we spent 85% of our time planning. And if you're on the cusp of doing this, after the presentation, if you give me your email address, I'll be happy to just dump you all of our business case documents and many of our process flow documents as you want, our project plan. We spent a lot of time going through all the breakdown structure of the project plan before we started doing anything. And so we had a clear understanding of everything that needed to be done. We have been somewhat mildly successful in putting together some accepted project management methodology in our little community college environment. And many of the college people have really bought on into it, especially if they've gone through the process. And we did follow that process. And we really emphasized, you know, what we were designing over who our vendor was or what we were actually going to ultimately build. So the design was really critical to us. I had to put this in here. This is our project management process that we follow with any of our large projects and any of our more substantial kind of maintenance projects that we do within IT. We have an initiate stage, which in this particular project was that whole business case, business analysis phase, which ultimately resulted in the second part of that being our project charter. This funnel is very much how our college works. We have a lot of people with a lot of good ideas and want to initiate a lot of good projects. But once we start understanding what the expected goals are and the deliverables and the milestones and the resources, and we get our executive sponsors and our IT directors to sign off on it, a lot of them fall out because they just are not executive level, high priority type projects. We tried to do a place thing where our VPs prioritized projects, and that really didn't work. I gave up on that after about 2 years. This process works because if you tell the person they have to engage with us in coming up with a charter, determining the resources, determining the timeline, and that user person engages with an IT person and everybody buys into it, then it makes that approved hump. It's very likely to get done in our institution. We drive strategic ideas from a high level, but we don't drive a lot of these actual operational type project things from that high level. We support them, but they just don't drive that way in our institution. And then we start the planning phase, and then the execution phase, if we've done it right, is the shortest little piece of the project. And then actually one of my roles is to monitor a whole portfolio of projects that we're working on, besides actually managing them myself. The other thing that we did with this project, and we do with all of our major ones, which is another thing I'd really highly recommend to you, is make sure you assemble the right team of people with this, and particularly the executive command managers, the users from all stages of the process. You know, for some reason, our departmental people, you know, our registrar wants to be the one who tells us what everybody in his world does. And he's great, but he doesn't always understand what everybody does at a detailed daily level. And so it's really important to involve all those people in the process. And the other thing is to keep focused on the objectives and shared trust between especially the IT department and the user community, because we've had so many failures because the failures of the last two, of the previous two, really were related to this. Our IT people had one objective and our users had another one, and nobody trusted anybody and nobody could work together, which is what caused our problem. It's also critical, and it was critical in this or any project, to have a sponsoring committee that really has the ability to solve issues and give you resources. And we created a senior manager group that was totally bought into this, and it was a top priority for them. And there were a couple of times I had to escalate things to them, and they stopped other work that was going on and realigned staff to make us stay on the timeline we had all agreed to. And then our implementation team was a real blending of users and technical people. And here's the chart of what it looked like, actually. I run the three-ring circus. I'm in the middle of it. But our sponsoring committee was really our senior student services people. This was the student services project at the campus, as well as my boss, the CIO. All of the people who have resource ability, who can move people around or reassign priorities if there's an issue. And I met with them as needed, not frequently. I kept them informed normally through a systematic reporting process. But if I needed them, I called them to deal with issues. I also had a steering committee on the IT side. My two colleagues, we're a small shop with like 35 people, and I'm one of three directors there. One is on the enterprise side, and one is on the application side. And if I don't get the two of them on board, nothing happens. And we all work in higher ed, and I work in a community college, and you can't walk into somebody's office and say, you will do this, because life just doesn't work like that in our environment. So I had to keep them on board and informed of everything we did. So I worked with them really closely as a steering committee. Our implementation team was a whole mixture of user people. We do have a couple of business analysts on the IT side, and those were the ones who actually did the process flow analysis pieces, and they could come and talk to you all day about that. And we did use, and this is important for our vendor, they had really good professional services available to us. And we did use a consulting resource with our vendor through the execution part of the 4 months. And they were on that project team. And then because we were multi-campus, we created actually campus teams to run the actual implementation of the campus, because we needed people on the ground who had bought into it and were actually early on helping us make decisions. Because I knew if I brought them in early, then when it came time to actually sell it to their people and the people in the field, that they would do that. If I didn't bring them in early, they wouldn't do it. Make sure you choose, whatever project you do, make sure you choose a scalable solution and to clearly define what your deliverable is. This is where the trust factor comes in. We put it in writing, and then they won't sign it, but I sit down eye to eye with everybody on that team and make sure we're all in agreement on what the deliverable will be, and we stick to it unless someone really high up changes it. They've all learned that if I say it's out of scope, it's out of scope, once we all determine the scope. We did document our as-is process flows. This was challenging for them. Why are we wasting our time? It was really critical that we drew charts of what we currently do. And that was the only way we could make it to where we wanted to be. We built the prototypes. We tested it again with the actual end user that was going to be doing the work. We didn't allow our user managers or our technical people to impede our process. The technical people, the technical geniuses are wonderful, but I had a couple of them because we had this cool new workflow tool. They were making the most convoluted, complicated workflows you can imagine just because they could, and they had gone through all this training. And so we had to back up and say, no, the piece of paper goes from point A to point B, and that's all we really need for this one. Later on, we'll do something a little more complicated, and we have. We selected a small area to implement. Actually, we didn't, but I would recommend you do that. We did the registrar's office, which was pretty huge when we went live for the first couple of weeks. And it's motivated the staff, and I feed people all the time. That's really one of the few things I have to motivate people. And then we really looked at how we did our system and process integration to make sure that we were able to integrate with our legacy system. That was important, and that we could pull data from that system, because we really needed to be able to make sure these were well integrated, because we knew we were going to live with both of them for quite a while. And then this is where you got to manage the rollout pretty well. And really be conscious, if you're doing what we were doing and you're moving from a paper-based system to an online system, this is a huge impact on people. I went through this when we implemented a new purchasing system a number of years ago, and we went to more e-purchasing type things. I way underestimated the impact of change on people. And it was not pleasant. So I learned from my mistake. These are a couple of other things. We can move on here. Okay, here's the few things about what you need to do when looking for a vendor. Again, if you're getting ready to do this, come and talk to me, and I'll send you our criteria grid of the factors we used. Our number one factor was, is our vendor already in the higher ed space, and can they give us recommendations of schools like us? We're a middle-of-the-road community college without a lot of money. So we're just not in a place where we can be doing cutting-edge technologies. We had to do something that someone else had already done that we could follow behind. And that was really important to us. They gave us some new customers, some long-term ones, and we actually went and visited some of these customers in order to make sure that when we narrowed down to the vendor we wanted, was this product going to truly work for us? Other things to look for is the install base of what's their client base? Higher ed experience, their financial status. We actually looked at their financial reports to see the financial stability of the company. Support level was really important to us, because we have a half-time technical resource, or two half-times. Both of those guys on the slide have two or three other systems they support as well. So we did not have a lot of IT resources to support the system, so we needed to make sure our vendor had that for us. We were very concerned about their roadmap. The technologies, honestly, that they were currently using, we weren't 100% comfortable with it, but they were in a process of upgrading their base technologies, which have actually helped us, and that there was good user groups. We needed to make sure we had the APIs. The licensing model was key to us, too, because we have so many people who were going to be viewing and using the documents and scanning. So we needed a little licensing model that would support the ability to have eventually hundreds of scanners all over our district. Some other things with the support and maintenance. The last item was really critical too, is the ability of our vendor to work within the technical infrastructure and standards we already have. Again, we're a small shop. We're on the database side, other than our mainframe database stuff, we're SQL. And that's it. And because we have two DBAs and that's it. So we really look to limit the technologies we're using, because we just don't have the staff resources. So we needed something that fit into the infrastructure we already had and our infrastructure direction we were going in. So that was really key to us. And we think we found them. Their company is Optical Image Technology. Docfinity is their product suite. We've been very pleased with the company and the products. They're open architecture. They can do development for us. We've taken on doing a little bit ourselves. But if you're looking at these products, Erica is here. She's one of their people at their booth. Or stop by their booth and talk to them. We've been very pleased with the company that we've chosen. And, you know, our hard dollar return on investment really is mostly in staffing and physical space. But we've seen marked improvement in our student services. Our students are much happier. Even our staff, we've seen real improvements with our ability to serve students because of this. And again, it wasn't the back-end filing that became our secret on our nirvana. It was actually the point of entry scanning and the workflow that made a huge difference for us. Okay, we have a little bit of time, I think. Does anybody have a question? Optical image technology. Erica, she's right here on the front. And Docfinity is it? Optical image technology. Yes. That's a good question, and I did not cover this here. And that was a big part of that project. We used a company in Fort Lauderdale called Data Impact, and I could do a whole presentation on what not to do in a backfile conversion. And if you can possibly not do one, I would recommend don't do it. but we did do it. We actually backfiled and imaged almost all those 4 million documents. It was a nightmare. I can send that information to you. It's the key to that, and if I can give you a really short answer, is make sure whatever you do it in small increments. Don't let the documents leave your campus unless you know exactly what left, and then have them bring it back. We learned that the hard way, because we're still fighting to find things from 2 years ago. And once we learn that, we, like 10 boxes at a time, they image them, they come back, and then we check them. So do it in small, and we thought that it was going to be really important to do it before we went live. In hindsight, it wasn't that important. It would have been better had we waited to do the backfile conversion after we went live, because we had all these images that we had converted to image. They were off-site. We did have a website where you could look at them, but if we had been able to bring them back into our new system, we would have realized problems that we had that we didn't realize till we started loading them into our new system. So that's one thing I would have changed. I would have done the backfile after we went live. Data Impact. At the end, when we got to human resources, I would give them an A. While we were doing the student one, I would give them about a C minus. So I would talk to them cautiously. There are many other vendors who do this as well. The real key is to, again, make sure you've really documented your processes for things leaving your campus and returning to your campus, and you have tight control. And that's going to require people. That actually, in this project, the backfile conversion and the control of that was most of the dollar resource that we had to spend. It was mostly for the backfile. For our human resources records, we were filing things in the order in which they were received, which for our human resources department is not the way to do it. And so we had huge files that we went through every file and took out documents and reordered things, and it took them about a year and a half to do it. So that's where our real cost was in the backfile. In student, I wouldn't even do it, because of our student retention schedules in the state of Florida are such that over time those documents would be destroyed anyway. So if you're a registrar, I apologize for that comment. but if you're anybody that's got to spend money or on the other side of this, I would really make them prove to you the business case of why they have to do that backfile. Right. It was a combination of three people really on the team. OIT's consulting resources were really key to this, and because they provided the resource to help to do the analysis. The other thing is we do have internal business analysts within IT. We have a couple of them on the student side, and then they worked with the actual department. And we actually, part of this project was we actually invested in business analysis training for our staff, both on the user side and the IT side. So we put them through some training on how to do process reengineering as part of this project, which they've now taken on to other things. But it took time. That's the real key here. It was several years in the planning before we started executing anything. Most of our documents really are 8.5 by 11 when they're scanned, and the actual software allows you to turn the image and then enlarge the image. So we really don't have any kind of issue. I mean, they scan in usually like this, and then they can just, with a click of the button, change the orientation on the screen. Now, we did get fairly large monitors for them. I think they're 19-inch monitors. So they have pretty big monitors, especially those people who are looking at transcripts all day long and other pieces of paper.
I have a few quick questions.
Okay. No, we have not done that. Our president's office would like to do that. In our roadmap, we're going to our contracts office, which is part of our president's office next. And then they will be after that. Yes, the state of Florida for us has a pretty detailed records retention schedule for nearly every piece of documentation. And, okay. Actually, yes, we can do that, and we can do it a couple of different ways. We have automated processes that send out emails, and Docfinity does have an importer feature where we can send it to an email address, and it will import with the student information and import in automatically. And we do that in many cases because of one of the deficiencies in our ERP is it will create a correspondence, but it doesn't keep a record of it. And that's how we're now doing it without them having to print it out and put it in. The other thing is that you can upload directly. If you've got an email in your Outlook that you want to upload to the student's file and you have the security authorization to do that, you can just upload it right to the student's folder. I didn't really focus on that, but it is a content management system. We put everything in there, not just paper. There is nothing that's centralized. All of our desktops are set up in such a way that when you authenticate to the desktop, then it recognizes the scanner, and multiple people can, you can log off and someone else can log onto that desktop. So we don't even have a file room concept anymore. We don't really have a centralized place to scan. We have it at desktops. And there are enough of them that if someone needs to sit down another desktop, they can. And there are cases where there are some inboxes where someone else does the scanning for someone. But 90% of the scanning is done by the person touching the piece of paper initially.
I have the same question, basically. Like, incoming mail, physical mail, does that come into the mail room and scan at the mail room? Or does it get all the way processed up to the
office? We have a mail room that sends it to the financial aid office, and then they open the mail.
Okay.
The person who opens the mail does the scanning at that point in time. They what they do is they log the receipt of it into our ERP and scan it. So they bring the ERP system up, log that they received it, and then just do another click, and it grabs the data and scans it, and they're done. They do it as soon as they open the mail each day. And they've stayed on top of it because it's a whole lot more fun. You don't have to get up than it is filing. So they stay on top of it. And we can, again, distribute it amongst many people. When we first went live, they kept the bloody stuff because they didn't trust it. And it would pile up into boxes. And then they were filing it. They were actually organizing it and refiling it in case they had to go back to it. It took them about 3 months. Now they shred it the day they receive it, if it comes in the mail. And then again, at the counter, they just hand it back to the person. They have such comfort with our system, and it's so reliable, and it's up 24/7 for them, that they've gotten that comfort level now where they just, they scan it, and they don't want to see it anymore, which is amazing. And that's in a year's time we actually got there. It's really revolutionized the way our student services people think about, and our HR people think about their world. In fact, our HR is going through a whole renovation of their department now because they freed up 3 different rooms. They were like insane. They had a file room for your evaluations, and then they had a file room for your HIPAA documents. And then they had a file room where they only put your applications in. They had like different rooms for different pieces of your file. It was sort of insane what they were doing, but because they were so, you know, only two people in financial and in HR can look at these documents. So.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Real Networks enables digital delivery of distance learning coursework, athletic events, and more to students anywhere. Information at realnetworks.com.